आस्ते यारु कुलाम भोदा
आस्ते यारु कुलाम भोदा
आजो नंत सका पुमान
आजो नंत सका पुमान
मंगलाया
मंगलाया
for
all good
cha
cha
also
also
lokanam
lokanam
of all the planets
all the planets
shemaya
shemaya
for protection
cha
cha
and
babaya
babaya
for elevation
cha
cha
also
aste
aste
is there
yadukula ambodha yadukula ambodha
in the ocean of the yadu dynasty Aja,
Aja,
the original.
The original.
Ananta Saka,
Ananta Saka,
in the company of Ananta.
In the company of Ananta.
Uman,
Uman,
Supreme Enjoyer.
Supreme Enjoyer.
Yadbahu Dandagupayan, Sukhuyan Yadavotita, Pidanti Paramanandam, Mahaparishitaiva. Yat.
Yadavus.
Bahu Danda Guptayam.
Bahu Danda Guptayam.
Being protected by his arms.
Being protected by his arms.
Sapuryam.
Sapuryam.
In his own city.
In his own city.
Yadava.
Yadava.
The members of the Yadu family.
The members of the Yadu family.
Archita.
Archita.
As they deserve.
As they deserve.
Kridanti.
Kridanti.
Are relishing.
Are relishing.
Karma Anandam.
Karma Anandam.
Transmitted by them.
Mahaparoshita,
Mahaparoshita, the residence of the spiritual side.
Residence of the spiritual side.
Deva,
Deva,
Deva. Translation. The original personality of Godhead, the enjoyer. And Balaram, the primeval Lord Ananta, are staying in the ocean of the Yadu dynasty for the welfare, protection, and general progress of the entire universe. And the members of the Yadu dynasty, being protected by the arms of the Lord, are enjoying life at the residence of the spiritual side. As we have discussed many times, the personality of Godhead Vishnu resides within each and every universe in two capacities, namely as the Garbhagapashayi Vishnu and the Shirogapashayi Vishnu. The Shirogapashayi Vishnu has his own planet on the northern top of the universe. And there is a great ocean of milk where the Lord resides on the bed of the Ananta incarnation of Baladeva. Thus Maharaj Yudhisthira has compared the Yadu dynasty to the ocean of milk and Sri Balaram to the Ananta where Lord Krishna resides. He has compared the citizens of Dwarka to the liberated inhabitants of the Vaikuntha Lotus. Beyond the material sky, further than we can see with our eyes, and beyond the sevenfold coverings of the universe, there is the causal ocean in which all the universes are living out of the world. And beyond the causal ocean, there is an unlimited span of spiritual sky, generally known as the effulgence of the world. Within this effulgence, there are innumerable spiritual planets, and they are known as the Vaikuntha planets. Each and every Vaikuntha planet is many, many times bigger than the biggest universe within the material world. And in each of them, there are innumerable inhabitants within the material world who look exactly like Lord Vishnu. These inhabitants are known as the Mahaparushikas, or persons directly engaged in the service of the Lord. They are happy in those planets, without any kind of misery, and they live perpetually in full youthfulness, enjoying life in full bliss and knowledge, without fear of birth, death, or danger of disease, and without the influence of Kala, eternal time. Maharaj Yudhisthira has compared the inhabitants of Dwarka to the Mahaparoshikas of Vaikuntha Loka, because they are so happy with the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita, there are many references to the Vaikuntha Loka, and they are mentioned there as Madhama, or the kingdom of the Lord. This is a very poetic verse describing Krishna and Balaram, their presence with the other dynasty. Krishna always tells Antaraj, you're never alone. Whenever you talk about pleasure, you must talk about relationship and reciprocation. Krishna is always with his associates, those who are qualified to remain in the personal presence of the Supreme Lord. Krishna never becomes overcrowded. The spiritual world never becomes overcrowded. Whenever I first started to hear about the spiritual world, I thought, I should hurry up and go there before it gets packed out of the crowd. This is applying the fear of conception to spiritual subject matter. Our notions of time and space and measurement do not apply to anything spiritual. For example, the Vedic literature says, Keshava Shatavava Shah, Shamsa Sadhishava. The spirit soul, the jiva, is 110,000 pieces of the hair. Now, that's to give you some idea of how tiny the spirit soul is. You take one hair, take the tip of a hair, and divide it into 10,000. That's to give you some idea. And also in the second hand of Bhagavan, it says that the super soul is an arc about 8 inches in size. These things are all to give you some approximation. Even when you say that Krishna, his face is like a lotus flower, or he has lotus feet, that's also just to give you some idea. The lotus flower is considered to be almost if you ever have seen a perfect lotus flower, then you'll understand why the Shastras are the comparisons of Krishna to lotus flowers. Lotus face and lotus feet. But once again, such statements are just to give you some approximation. Krishna's complexion is compared to be like dark rain clouds. And his eyes are compared to the red rising sun. These are all to be you can say that Krishna is so beautiful that words cannot describe him. At the same time, you cannot say that therefore there shouldn't be any descriptions of the beauty about him. Both things are there. Krishna's beauty can never be fully described. Even the incarnation of Godhead Ananta with unlimited heads has been trying to chant the unlimited glories of the Lord and never gets to the end. But still, it is your duty, and more than your duty, it is your constitution of nature, your original nature, to glorify the Lord as far as your capacity allows. And certainly you cannot reject the Shastra, the Vedic literature, simply because words cannot fully capture the Supreme Lord. If the Supreme Lord gives you information, then you say, no, we can't take it, you're beyond words. How is that? But this is the way so many people are today. You try to teach them Bhagavad Gita. You try to teach them Srimad Bhagavatam, and they say, it's really spiritual, it can't be put in words. God really exists, no words can describe. So you, on the one hand, claim to admit that the Supreme Lord is all-powerful, omnipotent, but then you refuse to take the description that the omnipotent Lord gives you. You cannot limit Krishna, saying, you cannot come in words. Krishna can not only come in words, he can come as stone. He can come as metal. He can do whatever he likes because everything is his energy. So many people misunderstand deity worship. I don't worship this. I'll never forget Rocky Ashram and Sacred. And the people were gathering around we have this huge juggernaut being here for that. So, the deity was on the cart, and some people, they were gathered around. I saw one lady, you know, she had her beer can, and she was like, looking at the girl, and she was like, what are these guys up to? Now, people think sometimes that, oh, they're worshiping idols. These are the Hindu idols. This is where the English word juggernaut comes from. When the British first saw the Rathyatra ceremonies in Jagannath Puri, Orissa, on the eastern coast of India, seeing the huge chariots with the deities on them, they heard the Hindus, quote unquote, chanting Jai Jagannath, Jai Jagannath. Millions of people surrounding these chariots in a parade. So the British, they just coined the word juggernaut. Whenever there's like a powerful thrust forward, it's called a juggernaut. So you'll find that word in the dictionary. And that's where it comes from. Instead of juggernaut, it's a juggernaut, a powerful surge, or a powerful push forward. So, you cannot say that Krishna should not come as metal or stone or picture or words. All these things are the energies of the Supreme Lord. He does whatever he likes. You cannot restrict him. So why should you ban Krishna from giving descriptions about himself? This is crazy. On the one hand, you say God is omnipotent. On the other hand, you seal his mouth so he can't talk about himself. This simply reflects our desire to maintain our rebellion against the Supreme Lord. Oh yes, you exist, but don't try to tell me anything. What? You're trying to issue some directives? Remember, you're beyond words. What? You're trying to give instructions to tell us how to live? But you're God. You're inconceivable. Words of no use to you, so just be quiet. Anyway, you didn't even talk anything because of, you know, you're beyond talking. Just like some people criticize that. Why should you hear Krishna's pastimes? Since you accept him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you know he's always going to try them. So where's the thrill? Thrills only come when you don't know the outcome. When you go to a good movie, you don't know how it's going to turn out. How many of you have had the experience that your friends, they have went, how many of your previous Monday your friends, they went to a movie and, you know, they came back telling you, oh, it was really good. And then you told them, well, don't tell me how it ended, I want to see it for myself. How many of you have done that? Yeah. Don't spoil the pleasure.
You done this? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to see for myself. I'm going to have some fun in life, in other words. This is how fragile and phantasmagorical our so-called material pleasure is. That, you know, someone goes and sees something that supposedly gives them some happiness, and they want to tell you about it, and you say, no, 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 don't tell me about it. The pleasure will reduce. That's how fragile it is. That's why in that song, Vajra Hanre Mana, there's that line, Kamala, you know, I'm almost. I'll get back up. So, a drop of water on a lotus flower is situated very precariously. It can fall off at any moment.
Look over your house.
Similarly, you say that our lives in material existence are like that. We're just so precariously situated, yet we're so proud. Don't tell me how to move your day. Don't spoil the pleasure, as if we're dealing with something substantial. want to see for myself. I'm going to pay my hard-earned money. I'm going to pay my precious gold money. I want all the pleasure I'm entitled to. I want to be able to sit there in front of the movie screen and be totally saturated and absorbed and get the full benefit of not knowing how it's ending. Some people, they can criticize. You say Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and you're always hearing his pastimes. But you know, according to you guys, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That means he always wins. So how can there be any pleasure? You always know the outcome. Krishna triumphs.
How would you answer that?
This is their challenge. Since Krishna is the Supreme and he's all powerful, where's the excitement in meditating what Krishna does? Because you always know how it's going to turn out. Krishna's going to win. What do you actually do then, besides just go ask him? Let's be more detailed in terms of concrete everyday experience. If you're actually going to have to, what do you actually do in terms of sensory experience? That's all true. But the answer is quite easy. Yes, well, that's true. The point is that even though Krishna always wins, he does things in such an extraordinary way that even though you know he's going to win, still you are totally caught up in what he's doing. This is the true definition of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even though you know Krishna is going to defeat the demon, and even you heard it 15 times, thousands of times, still you're enthralled. Because Krishna is indeed all-powerful. So when you say Krishna is all-powerful, therefore what's the point of hearing what he does? Because you know it's just all-powerful all the time. You're not really saying Krishna is all-powerful. If Krishna is all-powerful, then he's capable of doing everything in such a way that you can hear it again and again and you'll still be enthralled.
You can drop it.
You can read the Krishna book again and again and still you're totally captivated. Because, yes, that was good. All attractive. That is the real definition of all attraction. Who do you know? What do you know in the material world that can do that?
None. Has anyone ever said?
Come over to my house and every day you're going to find a completely fresh experience. Have you ever been before? Have you never been there before?
You found something anything coming in.
This has that unlimited potency to captivate you day after day. Of course, Maya has limited potency to captivate you every day, but the same old thing. The wonder of Maya is that although it's limited and temporary, still we're hung up on it. Although it's giving us the same old thing. Is the inconceivable paradoxical glories of Maya. You're just getting an opportunity to chew the chewed, but still you cling so tightly to it. Meanwhile, Krishna's glories are there, ever fresh, all attractive. And you're not interested in that. That's why Rupa Goswami in Nectar Instruction Sya Krishna Nam Charitari Sya The holy name of Krishna is like sugar candy. But we have a problem with our families. They're covered by ignorance. Therefore, even though Krishna's name is eternally unlimitedly sweet, because we're contaminated, we don't taste the sweetness. Because we're still hankering for pleasure in the material world. But Rupa Goswami assures you, if you just carefully and diligently chant these sweet names every day, the natural taste of your tongue will reawaken. So that is why we have our regulated program, to bring back the natural taste.
Sometimes you may wonder, why do we do all these things every day?
But maybe modern you, when you are new or you're hungry, why do we do this routine every day? Chant a few rounds every day, what's the big deal? You know, why do they have these prescriptions, this discipline they follow? Why don't they just be kind of nice religious people and just believe in God and lead good moral lives, have wholesome pleasure without hurting anyone? This is, if anyone thinks about religion, this is their conception.
Yes.
Have a good moral life. Have good fun, wholesome fun, without hurting anybody. Take your due. The Lord wants you to enjoy. The Lord has given you these bodies to enjoy. But it all should be going on in a way that doesn't hurt anyone. You should always offer your thanks to the Lord for the good times. He's giving the daily bread.
I remember whenever I
tell my mother about what Vedic household life is like and the rules and regulations, and she was, I don't know where you guys get this from. The Lord has given us these male and female bodies. Don't blaspheme the Lord's arrangement. Defile these activities. They've been given by the Lord.
Well,
so-called nice people. There's no one nice in the material world, but we think we're pretty nice. I wasn't the ordinary Carmi. I wasn't the ordinary materialist. I was nice. I had scruples. I was sensitive. Well, we take the Krishna consciousness and we think, why undergoing all these procedures? It's a process for everything. There's a way to do everything. Why can't you just be religious? What does that mean, to be religious? Can you answer? What does it mean to be religious? According to the common conception. What do you think of being religious? Now, what does that mean, following religion? Yes, right, having some belief. Some belief in God. So you believe in God and kind of make your own way through the world, right? Yes, this is the savage's version of religion. Have some belief that sits on top of your head, and then just sort yourself out. Make your own way through this world. Maintain that sentiment of believing in God. So therefore people can't understand, what is this process of sadhana, bhakti, devotional service, according to the religion? What's the point of that? Chanting and even number of rising the whole point is to purify yourself so that your natural taste comes. That's why duty is very important in Krishna consciousness. Duty means never mind how you feel, because right now the senses are contaminated and you don't know your real feelings. This is quite a shock to us. I don't know my real feelings. I don't know how to really feel. Conditioned souls sometimes have a tough time. You try to tell me it's how to my feelings are not genuine, or they're not the real thing? We don't know what real feelings are. That's why it's fascinating to read Nectar of Revelation and find out about the feelings that we've long forgotten. The feelings in relationship in Rasa and Krishna. We're far from that standard, therefore, we have the rules and regulations of devotional service. By following those rules and regulations, you come back to your original state. Of proper feelings, real feelings. But, because we're proud, especially in Kali Yuga, oh, I know what feelings are. I'm in full possession of my feelings. I know what's a good feeling, a bad feeling, what's right and what's not, what feels good to me. No, in order to properly practice bhakti yoga, you have to accept that your senses are contaminated and you really don't know up and down. I mean, just think about it. Up until very recently, we were thinking, you know, we were relishing barbecue. You know, all of a sudden we take the Krishna consciousness and we're expert in what real feelings are. Mm-hmm. Relishing barbecue, crushing strange bodies in the darkness of broad daylight. Filling our heads with all sorts of intoxication. If we weren't doing those things, we were longing to. Society teaches if you're not doing those things, there's something wrong with you. Or else we were thinking, I don't want to do these things with everyone. I just want one person to have simple life. I'm different. Just one person. One nice person to become intoxicated with and have a little sweat. Yeah, just one person. Not everyone. No, I'm not right to go. To make progress in Krishna consciousness, we accept that our senses are diseased and therefore we follow medical prescriptions for reviving our natural taste. Even the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, liberated souls, they still chanted a numerical number of rounds. Shantapura Namadana. Lord Chaitanya. We chant in America language. So these are prescriptions so that we rise to the spontaneous stage of devotional service. You can tell that you're nearing the spontaneous stage of devotional service when you can't live without glorifying Krishna. Because we can't exist without Krishna. In the beginning stages of devotional service, however, you can certainly live without glorifying Krishna. Maya tells you, yeah. If I want to, I can drop this bhakti anytime. Krishna's okay, but I can do without them if I have to. Yeah, Krishna, you know, Krishna will always be there on the shelf. I reach for him when I want him, and I put him back when, you know, I need to take a break, you know. I mean, I'm still a nice person. I'm still, you know, a sensitive and caring person. I'm doing good to others. So, I may pick up Krishna when I want to and put him down when I don't. Still, you know, it's not an earth-shattering thing for me. When I put Krishna back on the shelf, I don't get struck by a bolt of lightning. Of course, I might be a little Maya, but that's all right. No lightning has struck me. Get into the Bhagavatam and read it, the association of devotees. Well, if it gets to be too much, is the fashion of it. Do myself in. When we're aware of how we destroy ourselves, I said they have a condition you can't make spiritual things not how you feel. That is good. Prabhupada, speaking very charitably, once said the only difference between him and us was that he's always praying to Krishna. He and Lord Brahma also, in the third canto of Bhagavatam, he's offering his prayers, saying that if I get into this creation activity, I may become proud and very cautious and wary. Creation involves passion by constructing the universe. But Lord Brahma takes the seeds and he engineers the universe. It's the seeds that allows him to engineer the universe. He was thinking, I'll become puffed up, I'll think I'm the doer. If he's offering his prayers, he should also do like that. We should push ahead in Krishna consciousness while offering prayers. The problem comes when we think we're the doer. We think we're so smart, we're so expert, and we get lost in our own head. We can't listen to counsel. Then we get in trouble. So both things have to be there. We want to endeavor boldly for Krishna while humbly offering our prayers to the Lord for his protection. Those things are there together. So Prabhupada, we like bold things done in Krishna consciousness. But we also have to understand discretion is the better part of that. While pushing ahead very dynamically, we always offer our prayers to Krishna, please help me from the heart. And we always take advantage of good association with the Lord. The protection of devotees keeps us out of tight spots that we don't have to pursue. Sometimes you can be sincere and be trying to do something for Krishna, and then you get into a situation and you don't see what's going on. So it's okay if you have some guidance going on. This is not what you think it is. This is not happening like you think it's happening. In the Bhagavatam, you find even the liberated souls take guidance. So it's not that we want to stop doing bold, dynamic things for Krishna. No, we just want to add some humility. That's all. Krishna told Arjuna to fight vigorously, but to think of him and understand that he's just an instrument in the yourself. Arjuna, victory or defeat is not your concern. You can just be an instrument in the fight. So we just want to be instruments for Krishna. We want to act dynamically, taking advantage of all circumstances, all breaks for Krishna, while maintaining our humility. Earlier in the first canto, we read about Vyasadeva and Narada Muni. Vyasadeva, the literary incarnation of the Lord, Shakti Vaishavatar, empowered Jiva for editing the Vedic literature. He was feeling dissatisfied after editing the four Vedas, the Upanishads, some Brahmanas, Vedanta Sutra. He was feeling dissatisfied. And he was puzzled by his dissatisfaction. And then Narada Muni came along, taking the position of the spiritual master, even though Vyasadeva was a great soul, Shakti Vaishnava. And Narada Muni told him that you are dissatisfied because you have failed to glorify Krishna enough. These Vedic literatures that you have presented, they are full of Purusharta, the four processes of material religion. Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. Dharma means religion performed for material prosperity, so that there is Artha, economic development. And with economic development, in accordance with religious principles, you can get Kama, sense gratification. And then the natural result of this Vedic process of Dharma, Artha, and Kama is that you get frustrated with sense gratification and start thinking about Moksha, liberation. Of course, Krishna consciousness is beyond that. Lord Chaitanya has said, Prema Pumartha Mahan, love of God is the fifth order, the ultimate goal of life in the fifth category, beyond liberation. Love of Krishna is beyond even freedom from material existence. So what real material religion is, you don't even see today. You just see savage life. You don't see real religion. Material religion means following Dharma, Vedic injunctions, so that you can prosper. But no one knows Dharma from material prosperity. They just think you're going to believe in God and then you're going to prosper and that's it. No. There are so many formulas and codes you have to follow to practice material religion. It's very complicated. You have to be concerned how to ward off bad karma, how to absolve your past karma, how to refrain from future bad karmas, how to balance the pious and impious activities. The whole science is very intricate. So that's material religion. And beyond that, of course, is love of Krishna. So Narada Muni said to Vyasadeva, you are feeling dissatisfied because you haven't glorified Krishna directly enough. You've done it a little bit, but not enough. You put the Bhagavad Gita within this huge Mahabharata. So, within the 250,000 couplets of Mahabharata, there's 800 or so verses of Bhagavad Gita. So Narada Muni said, the people, they'll just overlook Bhagavad Gita, and they'll get absorbed in all the politics and economics and material religion of Mahabharata. Mahabharata is just full of Vedic material life. That's why Krishna and Mother Gita says, don't become fascinated by the flowery words of the Vedas. So Narada Muni said, because you haven't glorified Krishna enough, you're feeling dissatisfied upon hearing that. Vyasadeva presented Srimad Bhagavatam, directly glorifying Krishna's death. We should also take this point in our own life. If I'm feeling dissatisfied, I haven't glorified Krishna enough directly. We want all our devotees to become enlightened and glorify Krishna directly. To become realized in seeing the potency of glorifying Krishna directly. Yes, sometimes we do things to indirectly attract people to Krishna. So we don't want to base all the major portion of our life on that. It will dry out, and then we'll become very susceptible to new devotees. We are merciful, we're compassionate, so we may do certain things so that people are attracted to Krishna. Krishna is all attractive, but these people are cruel. But then, nefarious. We develop various lollies to give them so they hear about Krishna. But we just don't want to spend our life giving out these lollies. We don't want that to be a major portion of our week. We want to experience the potency of directly glorifying Krishna.
how that attracts people.
But at the same time, we can be compassionate and do some things that will break down barriers, bring people to the door, but it cannot be the substance, the essence of our life. Otherwise, we dry up. When we dry up, then we become deeply harassed by the materiality. Of course, Prabhupada always said the best way to glorify Krishna directly is to steal his books. I think Christ Church has been watching the Jared and Papa Sharon come up and down the street to steal his books. Why would someone do this? What kind of taste? Adopt the place and remember the place that brings them out there. And these days, if you don't run into the books, you don't have to shoot. When Prabhupada was physically present, there was great support and encouragement to distribute the books. Prabhupada himself was rallying the troops by his physical presence. But since Prabhupada's disappearance, it's natural that they just slack off. In fact, you might be commended. Yeah. Go out and sell books and be fanatics for that. Be better than you in your life. So I was wondering what kind of case they get. Of course, you know, I know that anyone makes this service special. So he goes out and sometimes just does one book, and he comes back and says this one. That is the best means of glorifying Krishna. Therefore, it was so nice to preach to her because I could feel that I was assisting Prabhupada. She already started reading the Bhagavad Gita, so I was, my job was to fan the flame of her interest and get her to push on. My job was to agitate her mind, telling her what's in chapter 2, what's in chapter 3, chapter 4. Increase her appetite. But I couldn't do this if she didn't have the book on it. Yes, this book distribution defies logic and reason a lot of times. On the one hand, it seems that's a big deal. I go out and I do a few books. Is that really making a difference? But then you remember it made a difference in me, and you see people whom it made a difference in. So it's hard to figure out in the field. So please remember this point. Narrative point of the hour. Efficiency of the absolute. There's no efficiency in the absolute, but for our benefit and that kind of matter, just our argument for that kind of matter. Krishna is you haven't glorified Krishna enough. You've done so many supplementary Vedic things. Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. You've talked about the impersonal Brahman. But where have you given extensive glorification to the Supreme Lord? Therefore, you're dissatisfied.
Any questions?
about that. Taking our food, but then our salty tattoo, we have to get our own. That's a good choice.
When we think we are the enjoyer, our illusion increases. Just like today's verse says, the original personality of God makes the enjoyer. Now, this is the heart of the conflict. Who is the enjoyer, me or Krishna? This is what sadhana bhakti is cleansing.